Today's broadcast is sponsored by Parkside Student Residence. With state-of-the-art accommodations and amenities and located steps from campus, you'll feel right at home. Visit live-parkside.ca to apply today.
Hello, Ryerson, and welcome to the second episode of Ryersonian This Week. I'm Sawyer Bogdan.
And I'm Rachel Arhin. We're here to bring you all the news you need to know.
We have some great stories for this week, but let's discuss a couple that stood out from Wednesday's newspaper. As we all know, university can be expensive. There's tuition fees, books and materials, and of course, a place to live and food to eat. This week, Jessica Valieni wrote an article about nursing students' outrage at the cost of their program.
That's a cost linked to the final semester of the program when they spend virtually no time in the classroom. Nursing students in the fourth semester do 32 to 36 hour clinical placements, second year, so essentially they are paying to work. The expenses add up. With scrubs and parking at hospitals, in addition to all the other costs, the monthly expenditure is high.
To make matters worse, irregular clinical shifts make it difficult, sometimes impossible, to maintain a part-time job while balancing constantly changing schedules. Valeni also spoke to Boyan Avonlea, a fourth-year nursing student who had to resign from his job because they could not accommodate his schedule. Until the examination for nursing students to obtain their license is over in June, he has to rely on what little money remains in his OSAP or pull out his credit card.
Historically, Ryerson has been known for its hip, urban location. But as of the last few years, it is starting to gain notoriety for their success in sports. Specifically, the Ryerson women's volleyball team is on a roll. The Ram women have won 14 consecutive games so far this season. Saturday, they will be taking on the Windsor Lanterns, and if they win their 6 o'clock game, they will set a first-time team record of 15 straight wins.
This week, Ryersonian reporter Chelsea Lecce spoke with the team's middle blocker, Lindsay Cluxon. Cluxon largely attributes the team's success to the head coach, Dustin Reed. She says he really focuses on improving their skills and bringing a vast amount of knowledge to their team.
We're hoping that the Ram women will continue to make us proud and reach their ultimate goal. Good luck this Saturday.
The third anniversary of the day the Supreme Court decided to legalize doctor-assisted suicide is coming up in Canada on February 6. To commemorate this, the Ryersonian news editor, Jack Hopkins, wrote about his grandmother's decision to opt for assisted suicide. He joins us in studio today to tell us about that experience. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Sawyer.
When did this happen, and what led to your grandmother's decision to use assisted suicide?
My grandma, she opted for assisted suicide, and it took place last August. I believe the day was August 7th, and if we want to get really precise, I believe it was at 2 p.m. that afternoon. It was something I'll always remember the date and time of.
What led her to make this decision?
I believe it was 4 years ago, she was diagnosed with a brain condition called cerebellar ataxia, which is similar to ALS in that it slowly basically paralyzes you. She started having some problems with her balance bit by bit, and then she was in a wheelchair. And it just was getting worse. And it's one of those conditions where it's not treatable. We all had heard a bit about 3 years ago now when it became legal, assisted suicide. And yeah, she told us about a year ago that she was planning it. And that was when I left to go to Australia for an exchange. Yeah, we just had to start planning everything.
How did your family react, especially her children? That must have been hard.
Yeah, it is important to note that we all supported her, all the branches of the family, my dad and my aunt and uncle. The reactions weren't all the exact same, but I'm happy that we all supported her in this hard decision.
In your piece, you talked about achieving closure because of the process. Can you talk more about that?
Compared to, say, previous deaths in the family, it was in some ways easier and in some ways harder because we had time to really prepare as best as we could for D-Day, as I guess we call it, the day when it happened. And just, I think the important thing was being able to really think through and plan like what our final interactions would be together. I think that's the most important thing with the closest people in your life. You know, normally when people die, most of the time it can be unexpected to an extent. And then you're really left thinking, what was the last thing we did together? What was the last thing we said to each other? And in this case, at least, we were able to have really good control and sort of plan that through as best as we could. For all of us, that's what really mattered.
Finally, you chose to write about this for our audience. What was the hardest thing you had to do in this experience?
Yeah, so writing about it happened about 6 months ago. Me and my entire family, we've had time to process it and really, you know, adapt to the new reality of our, like, matriarch suddenly not being there anymore. So I think it was a good time to really pause and reflect and to think of the larger debate of assisted suicide now that it continues to unfold in Canada. I'm sure that more and more people will deal with it personally in their lives. It still is a new thing, obviously. After it was initially legalized 3 years ago, Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister, they took about a year and a half after that to formally pass a bill that officially allowed people to start opting for it. So it has been fairly new. I know my grandma was one of the first people in Ottawa. That's my hometown. She was one of the first, I don't know if the first, to have it done. So it still is a new phenomenon, and not too many people in Canada are familiar with it on a personal level. But that will change. People just need to have more awareness and understand it and think it through, maybe not even for themselves, but at least with their loved ones, because we all will at some point have older family members who will be in difficult situations, and a lot of them will want to think about it, and we all should have the right to. At least that's my opinion.
That's a good point to make. I appreciate you talking to us. I know this is a very sensitive topic for you, and it's hard.
I'm happy to talk about it. Yeah.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for coming in to join us.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Sawyer. Yeah, my pleasure.
And coming up next, Ryerson hosted a poetry night and workshop earlier this week, and they had a special guest. Reporter Anna Sienna has the story.
My mother works for a dry cleaner in the white part of town.
Let's go.
Where white people have green lawns, even though California has no water.
That was world-famous poet Paul Tran. Paul, who lives in Missouri, has placed top 10 at the Individual World Poetry Slam and top 2 at the National Poetry Slam.
I started writing poetry in college, so I was 18.
Paul came to Ryerson on Monday to run a poetry workshop and perform some slam poems at the Ram in the Rye. As the feature poet of Ryerson's Poetic Exchange open mic night, Paul performed some hard-hitting poems exploring themes of global injustice.
Well, I think about poetry as an art form that functions to change people's minds. I hope to write poems that shift people from one space of thought, one mode of perception, to another. Because I feel like that's how activism begins. That's how radical transformation begins.
Paul was especially inspirational for Robert Malloy, the co-president of Poetic Exchange, Ryerson's poetry student group.
I went to the College and Unions Poetry Slam Invitational with the Ryerson Poetic Exchange team as a non-competitor, and Paul was there. I did a poem, and I did like my like famous poem. I have this poem called Peter Pan, and it's like a trans poem. And Paul comes up to me and says, that was one of the most beautiful poems I have ever heard. And I fell on the floor. And it like made me want to keep writing poetry. It's been like a year. We spoke for maybe 45 seconds, and they remembered my name.
The Poetic Exchange Club is planning on hosting more poetry nights later in the year, with another one coming up on February 15th. For Ryerson Today, I'm Anna Chenney.
I'll have to keep that in mind next time they are hosting an event.
The Canadian Senate has voted to change the lyrics to the country's national anthem to make it gender neutral on Wednesday. There's no gender distinction in the French version. Why has it taken so long to fix it? Asked Patrice Dutille, a professor of politics and public administration at Ryerson.
O Canada became the country's national anthem in 1980, but according to Canadian Heritage, the song was first performed in 1880 with several different versions over the years. Since then, 12 bills have been introduced in the House of Commons to remove the reference to sons, but until now, all past attempts have failed. You know how outside the SLC there are all those food trucks? Well, there's a new coffee shop that's just opened up. They're called Mad Men.
The owner cares as much about his customers as he does his ingredients. I had the chance to sit down with him and find out more about his new business venture. Here's how it went.
Abby Howie is the owner of Madman Espresso, a new coffee shop located right beside the Ryerson SLC. Having moved to Canada a year ago from the USA, he is optimistic about his new home.
Toronto is a good future and a peace country, and accept everything, like accept anyone, have a like opportunity here to make it and live. You know, USA is good too as well, but here more secure, you feel more secure, you mean more freedom, you know.
Working for over 3 months, he built the entire shop out of 2 shipping containers in the hopes of sharing his passion for brewing coffee with the rest of Toronto.
This is my experience. I'm a barista man for 6 years in New York, and this is like my spirit. I like to serve nice coffee.
Howie takes great pride in the quality of ingredients he uses in each and every cup.
I'm using a third wave of coffee, you know, they are organic. And they are like medium roast, and I'm using 3 filter of milk. And everybody make cappuccino use 1 shot. I'm using 2 shot of espresso for mochaccino, for macchiato, and for cafe au lait.
The most important thing for Howie is that he not compromise on the quality of what he serves his customers.
So I make it different to make it better taste, you know. I make maybe less profit, but this is how I start. I feel bad if I use something low, so this is me, you know. But whatever I try to do for myself, I try to serve people.
And he says his business is slowly growing. Once a customer comes once, they keep coming back.
When I first open, I get 7 customers, and day by day I'm going like growing. And now I have a max like 30, 32 customers.
Howie is hopeful that students will give him a chance and see for themselves.
Because I trust what I'm doing, I trust my beans, I trust exactly like how I serve the Americano, how I serve the cappuccino, the macchiato, you know. I know exactly, this is my job, like 7 years experience, so I just wanted to taste it. Maybe I don't have really fancy place, but I need just to people to try it and judge.
Howie says his dream is to one day open Madman Espressos all across Canada. For Ryerson This Week, I'm Sawyer Bogdan.
The tea was amazing, and I have to say, quality ingredients do make all the difference.
He's clearly dedicated to making his new business work. For anyone wanting to mix up their coffee routine, Madman Coffee is open 7 days a week.
In pop culture news Sunday night, after the Grammys, Kim Kardashian uploaded a picture to her Instagram account, premiering her latest hairstyle. In classic Kim K fashion, this caused controversy. Rachel Aron has more with a signature Ryersonian rant.
What's up, Ryerson? It's officially Black History Month, and it's time to go OD on celebrating Black excellence. There are so many dope qualities that make up the beautiful diaspora we call Blackness, one of them being Black hairstyles. For those of you who don't know, hair is an essential part of Black identity. And for the many who were bamboozled by Kim Kardashian this week, let me officially set the record straight. The cornrows she sported this past Sunday on Instagram are not, and I repeat, not Borderic braids. Although Borderic did wear them in her movie 10, please do not be mistaken. This hairstyle is indigenous to the Fulani culture. This includes West African countries such as Senegal, Cameroon, and Nigeria. This right here is a classic case of cultural appropriation. And let me say, we're not here for it. Kim's platform and privilege reaches so many young and impressionable people that she has a responsibility to educate and do so accurately. Furthermore, with a Black husband and 3 Black children, it's her duty to understand the magnitude of miseducation and misinformation surrounding Black history. Now, there's nothing wrong with people wearing single braids, dreads, cornrows, or styles of that sort, but please pay homage and don't perpetuate a facade. Give credit where it's justly due, and let the world know that the cornrows are Fulani braids. With that being said, happy Black History Month, y'all. Let's continue to stunt. It's Friday, February 2nd, and that's a wrap for our show today. Be sure to check us out anytime on ryersonian.ca and follow us on social media.
You can give us a listen by subscribing to Ryersonian This Week on iTunes Podcast or Google Play. A big thanks to those who made this show happen, Angela Glover, Anna Cieni, and our guest, Jack Hopkins.
For Ryersonian This Week, I'm Rachel Arhin.
And I'm Sawyer Bogdan.
Stay blessed and don't be stressed. And thanks for listening.
Remember to tune in next week.